I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to another episode, listener. Today's guest is none other than Dr. Sam Falahati, the Chief Medical Officer of Olympic Wrestling for Great Britain. We explore Sam's connection to the sport of Olympic wrestling, the gap between amateur and Olympic wrestling, making difficult decisions as a medical doctor, the challenges of anti-doping and what's been done to improve the regulations, and we find out what it's like to be a ringside doctor at the Olympics. And if you fancy becoming a medical officer in sport like Dr. Sam, stick around to the end and he'll tell you exactly what qualifications you need. Let's head over to the ring and catch up with Sam.
Can you tell me why you got into wrestling in the first place?
Yeah, so essentially, my mum and dad come from Iran, and I was born here. But in Iran, wrestling is the national sport. So it's the number one sport, similar to how football is in this country. And there's no dissimilarity in terms of the way their athletes are treated, in a way like the Premier League footballers are kind of treated here, in terms of like the way they're adored and they're like, you know, the fandom and everything like that. So in Iran, you can easily, like, you know, sell out a, like, 10,000 seat, like, you know, arena for a wrestling event, and it will be packed, and there will be, you know, loads of, like, buzz and a great atmosphere. So wrestling is the national sport there. So when I, in the summers, when I was a kid, my mum and dad used to take me to, like, Iran to see, like, you know, my grandparents and stuff like that. And even though everyone in Iran knows wrestling because it's the national sport, but my family weren't, I would say, a wrestling family per se. But I, like, you know, I remember, like, it was, like, I think it was the 96 Olympics, and it was just that summer, and it was on the TV, and I was, must have been, you know, 5-6 years old, you know, no more than that. And I was just glued to this TV, and then I was asking, like, my mom and stuff, like, take me, like, you know, I want to go to, like, a wrestling club, you know, like, I want to, like, you know, experience this. And then, you know, I didn't really know or realize and appreciate it at the time, but, like, the, you know, club I went to, and there's, like loads of, like, you know, hundreds of kids, and, like, the coaches are of, like, you know, former, like, you know, world medalists and stuff like that, which is something that, like, if I wanted to do that at that time in the UK, I wouldn't be able to find that level of, like, you know, club. So when my friends, like, in the summer would, like, do, like, football camps and stuff, I would, like, go to Iran and do wrestling, and that's how I just loved it. I just, like, you know, loved it. The athletes were, like, kind of viewed as, like, you know, gladiators, like, so, like, superheroes. And I don't know, there was something intrinsically that just attracted me to, like, you know, the sport. And I really it was fun as a kid to, like, do it. It was tough, but it was fun as well. And I always done it, like, for the summer, then I'd come back. And then anytime, like, when I was a kid, I would go back. Like,
and, you know, going to some of those first sessions and rolling around on the mats and things like that, how did mum and dad take it?
Well, you know, again, they, because I guess in Iran, it's not just a sport, it's like a culture. So it's, I think my dad came to, like, the first one to make sure, you know, like, everything's, like, kind of okay. And but, like, they you know, everyone knows about wrestling. It's very much felt of like, I mean, there's like a slight misconception. Some people think like, oh, it's really like, you know, rough and like hardcore and maybe even like, you know, thuggish. But actually, like, especially in countries like Iran, it's viewed as like, you know, you need to be a sportsman. Like, you know, there's this kind of word called like pahlavan, which means, you know, you're not just like a champion, but you need to be humble, like, you know, in doing so. There's no arrogance and stuff like that. So, no, I mean, like, it was a fun way to, like, you know, fun activity, like, for the summer. And, like, yeah, I mean, I think I was screaming and shouting, I want to do it. So it was pretty tough for them to say no.
And, no, I love that. And I like that, you know, as you said, you spoke about the humble nature of it and the sportsmanship about it. And I appreciate that. And I was going to say, so in terms of getting started in the beginnings, what was the sort of, was there any barriers to entry? What were sort of the commitments you had to make?
From a sporting perspective, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I never, like, I was a casual trainer. I never really competed, like, you know, to any, you know, mentionable degree. So for me, it was very much like, I love the sport. So this is it. Iran's one of the, like, you know, if you're probably talking like the top countries of in the wrestling world in terms of performance, it would be the USA, Iran, Russia, in no particular order, those in terms of freestyle wrestling at least. So, you know, it was on my doorstep to get like access to, like, you know, these, you know, the equivalent of, I don't know, like, say, it's like in football, like, you know, like, oh, Steven Gerrard's just running a club, like, you know, football down the road. Do you want to, like, you know, go? It's like, yeah, of course. Like, why not? You know, so, like, you know, world-class, like, you know, coaching and stuff. So it was fun. And I can speak, I guess, if there was a language barrier, that would have been tricky. But because I could speak Farsi, that was fine. When I was a kid, my dad was there. He would, like, you know, take me and then maybe stay for, like, you know, a session. At that age, really, like, you know, I probably, like, you know, done it over the, like, summer periods from the age of, like, 7 to, like, 12, 6 to 12. It was more of a fun thing, but, like, although you're learning and it's tough, especially when you're, like, younger, it is just trying to kind of adapt to, or the coaches are just trying to adapt. Like, kids naturally want to play fight, so it's just kind of, like, adaptation to that and then building on that. So it was actually quite fun. I mean, it's tough, but, and I think it was different for me compared to, say, some of the other kids in Iran who maybe had aspirations of becoming world and Olympic champions, like, you know, 10, 15 years later, where the coaches were quite tough on them, but they knew, like, you know, I was a tourist, essentially, you know. So yeah. I think I got a bit easy. I was a bit lucky in that regard, like, in terms of the tough they were on me.
And, you know, being in that arena, kind of, even that kind of, as you say, just for fun, sort of casual level, what was it, you know, what was it that you learned about yourself in that moment?
So wrestling, unlike so many other, I mean, there's a few, I've dealt with a lot of sports professionally as a doctor, as a sports doctor. Wrestling, though, I don't think there's any other sport quite like wrestling that can humble you so quickly. You might think that you're strong. You might think that you're fit in shape. You might think that you've got good cardio. You're mentally tough. That all gets proven, or more so not proven, quite quickly when you step on, like, you know, the wrestling mat. And I think there's a certain rawness to it where, like, you know, there's, like, you know, two individuals, they step on it, there's no equipment, you know, like, it's not, there's, you can't blame your tennis racket for, you know, the performance not, like, well, you can't, it's not a team sport, so you can't blame, like, you know, your teammates. There's no, like, you know, win or, like, loss. It really is you in that moment, or just you and just someone else, and it's a battle of wills, it's a battle of technique, it's a battle of it's, you know, you have to use your mind in terms of, like, you know, strategizing. It's not just pure physicality and athleticism. So you need everything, like, you know, to be, like, you know, successful, which is why I have such huge admiration for, like, wrestlers that do achieve world champion, Olympic champion level. What it takes to get to there, I don't think really many people, I think certainly outside of wrestling, can appreciate. But even just, like, even in wrestling, it really takes a lot of sacrifice, a lot of grind. You need to be excellent in almost every area, athletically, strong, fast, have the cardio, have the technique, have the, you know, guts, as well as, like, you know, the mental toughness, flexibility. Just, like, you know, there's not really many sports that can really humble you and show you really what you are. And, That's why I love it, and I think that's why I love, you know, especially when you do the first few sessions. I think everyone will say, "God, this is like really, really tough," and actually that might, you know, detract a lot of individuals begin at the beginning, like in terms of like at least adults and stuff. But really, like if you can, and this is a phrase I've actually used a lot: embrace the grind. Like you. There's nothing quite like
lovely. And knowing, you know, the journeys of some of the athletes that you, you know, treated and things like that, what would you say is the sacrifices that they go through?
Oh gosh. You know what? Like, I don't think there's any other athlete or other sport who goes through the hardships from both physically, mentally, for statistically speaking, such little potential glory and reward. So, you know, the pinnacle really in wrestling is probably being an Olympic champion. And to do that, you have to have like, you know, the God-given talent, but you also have to be like, you know, putting in like, you know, the effort and the grind from every aspect. So you not only like, you know, to train, but also in terms of being an athlete free. And this is what I tell a lot of my athletes, that you need to be, if you want to get that like level of success, you need to be an athlete 365 days a year. It's not like, you know, there's no real like, you know, break really. Like, you know, okay, it doesn't mean you need to like, you know, by all means don't need to overtrain like, you know, every single like, you know, day, but you have that mindset. So that means what you're putting into your body from a nutrition point of view, hydration point of view, getting your sleep right, everything. So, you know, you're sacrificing a lot. Like when you're like, if you're probably like a teenager and you're going to these training sessions, you're probably missing out going out with your friends, like to like, you know, parties, like going out for like a night out to a club or a pub, stuff like that. And I don't, as I say, like the training itself is, it's hard, you know, it is, I mean, I've seen like wrestlers like in a day in a competition, like their first mat, they'll break their nose. They've still got 3-4 other matches to go in like, you know, the rest of the day. They might like, you know, like tear their meniscus. They have to keep going on. They'll go, they embrace the pain. Not like no other athlete that I've come across, really, and I've dealt from a sports medicine point of view, I've dealt with most.
Absolutely, and it stems back to something that you said right at the beginning of this, was the gladiator mentality, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a mental side, you've touched on it about how difficult it is and things like that, but what in the sport is there to prepare the wrestlers to you know, go out and actually onto the mats in front of everyone on when the lights are on, you know, yeah. Is there any support in that space?
Well, so the way it really works is that every country will have a national federation, and which will set up its coaching team and infrastructure and staff, etc. And as you can imagine, like you know, it is a, you know, very diverse, and like, you know, most countries participate in it to some degree, to varying degrees. But you can probably imagine that culturally, some countries might find it more difficult to bring in, say, sports psychologists than other countries. My recommendation is that any elite, like, you know, level wrestling, you know, like national team should have a sports psychologist, like, you know, involvement. Because although, like, as I was saying, like, you know, how tough it is and that grind and, like, you know, physically and the training and everything like that, when it comes to, like, competition day, it's 95, maybe 99% mental. So you need to be in the right, like, you know, mindset. And the athletes that I see that are successful, those Olympic champions, those, like, you know, world champions, they've brought it. Like, you know, they've got it within themselves, but they also seek, like, you know, the help of the sport, you know, elite sports psychologists. And I've worked with a lot of actually sports psychologists, and through my work, you know, I've learned from them to be able to help out. So, like, you know, saying, like, well, Britain, like, at the moment, just because of the funding structure, they can't afford, like, right now for the team to have, like, a sports psychologist. Like, or, you know, but, like, I'll do a lot of, like, you know, that work as well, like, with them. And to be honest, probably, and for every wrestler, the most important relationship that they will have is with their coach, because their coach will be a bit of everything. They will be a bit of a doctor, a bit of a psychologist, a bit of a, you know, obviously their coach, but they will be their fourth port of call. So they have to have that, you know, a good coach will be switched on to see, okay, even when my athlete's maybe not like telling me, I know something's up here. You know, I know what makes them tick. I know what makes them not tick. When I'm Matt Doctor for like a world championships, I get a very interesting perspective because like I'm kind of, well, up, you know, front row, so to say, because there's me, then there's the mats, and the only people that have really a better view are the referees, which are on, and the judge, which are like right next to the mat. So what I see is quite interesting because a wrestling match is 6 minutes long, 2 or 3 minute periods. And what will happen is that I see the different cultures of coaching style from different countries. So if I get like, you know, maybe a, you know, say the USA versus an Eastern European country, and the US, let's hypothetically say they lose, the Eastern European country, like, you know, wins. I would say most of the time, like, the what happens is when that US, like, you know, athlete comes down, the coach will be quiet or give them like a few quiet words of like encouragement, a pat on the back, but they'll know. I see, like, you know, other countries when they're losing, the coach is literally shouting at the athlete at their face, like, you know, and remember, they've just gone for a wrestling match at a high level, so they're exhausted. They don't even have the energy to, like, you know, say anything. They're not only exhausted, they're obviously devastated because they've just lost, but the coach is like screaming at them, like, you know, aggressively, like, you know, and I don't even understand what they're saying because it's like a language that I don't understand, but like, I'm assuming it's like, you can tell, it's like, why did you do that? You know, what's wrong? You know, and then it's like, wow, and you can really see there's a real fascinating culture in terms of how to deal with your athletes. I'm much more in favor of the former of what I said rather than the latter. I don't think there's much benefit than in, you know, bawling at your, you know, athlete after a loss right then. But yeah, it's fascinating. And the coaching relationship is really important, you know, because even as like, say, like doctors and all of that, and even sports psychologists, if sometimes the athlete might not want to, like, you know, speak out, and the coach will be with them the most, so they will know, they'll be able to, like, you know, convince them if they're maybe like shy about, like, you know, seeing a sports psychologist, stuff like that. But I think it's crucial for every, like, you know, elite team, because when it gets to that stage, once you've made it to that, say, Olympic world level, the difference really is the mental game and the mental side. I've literally seen it like in the difference.
Absolutely. And would you say that the same goes for the amateur side of wrestling?
Yeah, I do. I guess the only real difference that springs to mind is that there's less at stake, probably, you know, but obviously, you know, in terms of like when you're at that World Olympic level, it's like, you know, everything's on the line. It's like, you know, the difference between even becoming an Olympic gold to Olympic silver might be a world difference in terms of what that changes the trajectory for that athlete's career. But like when it comes to the amateur side, there's less at stake, but there's really no difference. I mean, there's probably lots of people that won't have the resources to maybe access a sports psychologist and stuff like that, you know, because they'd have to fund it via, you know, their parents or themselves, and it's slightly difficult. But there are still so many, like, you know, different like resources out there, even online, even through maybe like, you know, contacting your national federation and saying like, if you want to become one day Olympic or world champion, everything needs to be, like, you know, on its A game. And there's probably, you know, like, as much as, like, you know, big people will focus on their strength and conditioning or their diet and things like that, if you're not mentally ready, if you've done all that hard work and then mentally come that 6 minutes, you crumble. What a waste, what a shame. So it's something that might be, again, certain cultures might find it more difficult to talk about, but it's something that needs to be addressed professionally and well, to just the same way to, like, optimize and excel performance. That's how it should be viewed, in my opinion.
Absolutely, I can agree more. I think it's important to have these conversations and also just put energy into that side of an athlete's journey. I wanted to ask, so the gap in wrestling at that level from Olympic to amateur, how wide is it?
Oof. Like the Grand Canyon, like on it, or more so 10 Grand Canyons. It really is. And I'll give you maybe best to give, like, you know, you and like your listeners an example. Like I have friends and I know athletes that are like British champion, like, you know, in Britain, and no one can really touch them in Britain when it comes to, like, you know, wrestling. they'll get even like, you know, employed by say like UFC, like you British like UFC, like, you know, champions or UFC fighters, high good level like British UFC fighters, for them to help like their wrestling, and those UFC guys can't touch them when it comes to like, you know, wrestling. But when they when this British champion will go to like say the Continental, so like a European championship, right? They might face like a country like Hungary, and it might look as though they've never wrestled before.
Wow.
And then that Hungarian might, like, you know, go on and face the Russian, and it might look as though that Hungarian's never wrestled before. And then on a world level, it'll be like, say, like Russia against like Iran, Russia against America, and it looks as though it's just like a battle of like King Kong versus Godzilla, you know, and it's literally like, you know, in less than inches that, like, you know, separates them. But like, it's literally, that is like, you know, the level, you know, like there are levels to this, you know. And it's not to say that, like, for example, the Hungarian is not good, the British guy, they are good, but like it's so deep, like how the levels get and how really that's like top echelon of the ones that really do have a chance of getting, say, world gold, Olympic gold. There's only a handful, two handfuls in the world in each weight class that maybe less that like has a real shot, you know, and which is crazy to think, which is crazy.
Why is there such a tight margin of the ones that do make it and, you know, perhaps just fall at the last hurdle, so to speak?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I think one of the things definitely is the psychology that we were talking about. I mean, look, you really do have to have that athletic mindset 365 days a year. And that means you need to be eating well, sleeping well, eating appropriately to how you're training, how periodizing, like, you know, your camps. Like, what I say to some of the athletes I work with, in wrestling especially, is like, for example, the Olympics and the World Championships will be run over 2 days, okay? The World Olympics every 4 years, World Championships every year when it's not an Olympic year. But so if you want to be Olympic champion, you really only need to be the best on those 2 days. You don't need to be the best every single day of the year. It's almost impossible to like do that. So some athletes, they overtrain, you know, and some cultures, like, you know, are like this. They'll just go red line hard every single day of, like, you know, all the way up until, and then they'll end up actually, it was counterproductive, they'll cause themselves injuries, they're overtraining. You need to be quite smart about how you do it, and that obviously probably arranges of who your coaches are, the advice that you're getting, the resources that are available to you. There are countries, like, as I say, like Russia, especially the Dagestan area, like Iran, like, you know, the USA, that really do have strong traditional wrestling systems and cultures. And if you grew up in that kind of culture, you're already at a huge advantage compared to someone that grew up in Britain, you know, for example, yeah. You know, because you've already been through the ringer, so to speak, and like, you to even get to like, say, a national team level in one of those countries, you would have probably, you know, been, it probably automatically means that you've probably got a really good success chance of being a medalist at that world level, compared to if you're like, say, a national team level in another, like, say, weaker wrestling country, for example. But I guess what, like, you know, so when you're talking about those guys, like the best American versus the best Iranian, what, you know, what is going to separate them come competition time? Because, yeah, both are going to be ready, both are going to be good, both are talented. Yeah, they're going to probably have different techniques and styles. It probably is going to be 95% mental. You know, what, you know, how you are mentally and how you've prepared, like, you know, mentally, in terms of psychologically, sports psychology wise, for that moment on the day, and how, and I think that's really what I see what separates it at the time. Because there's a lot that's not in your control, you know, like the ref, you know, you might score, say, or think you score something that's 4 points, and then the referees give the 4 points to your opponent. And it can be something like that, which can literally just throw you off your game. But you need to kind of be prepared for that adversity and like have these kind of visualizations with your, either yourself, your sports coaches, your coaches. Like, these are the kind of things that, like, really the elite, and I'm talking about the elite of the elite, your that separates your Olympic champions to just your Olympians. And there's like, being an Olympian in itself is wow. Like, I think that's like an incredible achievement in itself. But if we're talking, like, as I say, we're getting to that, like, you know, levels, then yeah, it's that's why I've got so much respect, because it doesn't come easy, and it's a grind like no other.
I mean, I'm exhausted even just trying to think about how to go through each of the levels, let alone physically doing it. So in terms of the British setup that you're obviously, I'd say, you know, more active in and familiar with at the minute, what's the culture like at the moment?
So it's good. I mean, I've been chief medical officer for the governing body for British wrestling for about 2 years now. So I'm not really sure what it was like prior to then, but it was actually quite interesting, like, funny side story. Like, I was first doctor of United World Wrestling, which is the global governing body and the international federation, prior to becoming CMO with British Wrestling. I was there, so I've been with them since 2019, and I had a world championships that I was the doctor of in Oslo in 2021, and I was waiting at the airport when I flew from Edinburgh to Oslo, and I didn't know, but at the time, the British coach, who was Scottish, like, he was also on that same flight. So we're waiting at, like, the airport where, like, the UWW staff, like, are taking us to our hotels, and he hears my accent, like, a Scottish accent. And he knows, because there's not many Scottish accents in the world of wrestling. It's not.
You
know, so he was all of a sudden like, so who are you? And then, like, I said, well, I'm the doctor for the World Championships. And then he was like, I can't believe that you're Scottish, like, you know, like, you're doctor for World Championships and you're Scottish. So he, like, I'm friends with him now, and he's a lovely guy. But, like, he called, basically, he was the coach for at the time for the British team at that World Championships, but he called back to the chief executive of the governing body here and said, look, like, the World Championships doctor is, like, British, is Scottish, like, we need to, like, you know, get him on board. And I had a nice conversation with the chief executive, and that's how it came to fruition for me to become, like, chief medical officer, because really they didn't really have any much of a medical, like, put it this way, I created the first medical competition guidelines for them, so and we've created some, like, concussion guidelines. So in terms of, from a medical point of view, there's been a lot of good work that's been done over the last 2 years, and what really kind of attracted me, like, you know, to, like, really become CMO was I went to the British Wrestling Academy in Manchester, and I met, like, some of the athletes who at that time, they were on their road to the Commonwealth Games to come wrestling at the Commonwealth, which is quite a big deal for them, of course. And there were just some lovely, like, you know, like, athletes that I really got on with, that I could see they were excited for, like, a doctor who, not just a doctor, but, like, a doctor who was involved in nose wrestling, like a wrestling doctor, yeah. had experience at that level, you know, of, like, world championships and stuff like that. So I was really excited to, like, you know, work with them, help them, try and help them, like, you know, make their ambitions come true when it came to the Commonwealth Games. I have the privilege of saying I'm friends with some of them today, and some of them have now become actually coaches of, like, the under 15s, under 17s now. So I think it's a moment for change, hopefully, in terms of prosperity for the future. Realistically, in terms of the level, Britain is not at the level to be competitive at that world and Olympic level. At the moment, it's just not. But I don't see, with a proper performance plan and structure, why one day, not too far, but in maybe the next 15 or so years, there could be a few athletes that are qualifying for, let's say, like, you know, the Olympics, because Britain has a great sporting tradition, and there's no... When I go, like, you know, to these, like, countries and I see the ones that are doing well, I'm saying there's no reason. If the USA are doing it, like, Britain can do it, like, you know, too. There might be, like, slight differences because, say, the US has, like, a collegiate system, and they, like, you know, so if you're good at wrestling, you can get a good like scholarship to a good university, and there's like these kind of incentives and things like that. But I mean, MMA has become so popular in the UK, and you know, the growth of the UFC, and wrestling is such an important, you know, it's now shown that it's become such an important part in terms of becoming successful at that level in like mixed martial arts. So I think if that's becoming like, you know, with the proper, you know, plan, performance plan and infrastructure, there's no reason why, you know, wrestling couldn't become more, grow more, and also become, have athletes that are actually successful in like getting medals at continental, world and level. Hopefully.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to see it. So in terms of, you know, the role of the doctor and how they kind of facilitate the wrestler's needs and things like that, what are some of the common, I wouldn't call them, what are some of the common challenges, I suppose, that you as a doctor have to come across?
So to give you an idea, like say if I'm a world championships and I'm like the doctor for the world championships, my day will kind of start from like 6 a.m. and end at 11 p.m. at night. So there, it's long days, and it'll be like for like say 8 days, because there's, you have like your freestyle wrestling, then women's wrestling, Greco-Roman, or in one particular order or another. But so at the start, if you do medical pre-weigh-in medicals, so to make sure really that there's the more thorough medicals have been done already, but this is just before they weigh in to make sure, okay, they're not looking like they've just dehydrated themselves, like, you know, 10 kilograms and so on, and they're about to, like, you know, collapse. They don't have like a staph infection, you know, so stuff like that. So you do all them and do it before the weigh-ins. Then when it comes to, like, you know, a couple hours later would be, like, you know, the matches. So, like, in a typical day, I might do about 100, like, you know, matches, because there's 6 minutes and it's one after the other. So the way, like, I, like, you know, like to do it is you really need to pay attention and kind of foresee what might happen. And if you can, try and prevent it from happening by either maybe a gesture to the referee or something like that. But there's a lot of good work that's been done of educating referees as well to kind of say, okay, if you see a joint that's getting gradually manipulated, stop the action, safety first and stuff like that. So that's been good. But then so when it's during a match, it's kind of like a pit crew. Like, I'll get called by the ref, like, you know, there's a cut. I just, you know, I just want to, like, you know, deal with it quickly in a way where they can carry on and wrestle. Obviously, if there's something that's like going to, you know, a critical injury, which is stopping the bout, say like a broken bone or something like that, then that's a different story. But any kind of muscular injuries or anything, the job is, it's very different than your, like, say your normal GP or your normal patient. That's why I say that they're not patients, they're athletes. So it's a very different environment, a very different dynamic. So you go in there and you have to, I like to try and do it with like an air of calm, like, so because they're stressed. The last thing they want to see is like the person that's helping them even more stressed. You don't want that. So you want to try and relax them and deal with it, whether it's a muscular injury, a cut, whatever it is, even if it's like a shoulder, like, you know, dislocation. Because if you think about it, you know, they've got all eyes on them, there's cameras on them, they're in the middle of a competition, like, you know, something that goes on is 10 times worse and more dramatic than what it actually is. So challenges can be, like, you know, language can be a challenge, because, you know, not always, like, you know, you're dealing with like athletes from all over the world. I speak two languages fluently, and I've dibble dabble in a couple others, but like really I speak only two fluently and properly, and that's English and Farsi, which is very handy. So like I'll deal with, say, the Iranian wrestlers and like the English speaker and speaking ones, but then sometimes, you know, like it can be quite tricky if I've got some wrestler from Russia and I can't speak Russian, and then you've got, like, you know, coaches that are, like, you know, wanting to interfere, and then the referees are doing a great job, like, you know, trying to police that. So, and then sometimes you might view that a wrestler, let's say, like, you know, is ahead on points, but is getting tired, and they're kind of what we call simulation, which is like saying, ah, okay, like, you know, I've got a sore ankle or something, and to just get like 30 seconds of a breathing time. So we also really need to try and make that judgment call. And if we do, we have the authority to actually tell the referee to give the opponent point. So, but that's a very different judgment call to make, actually. And sometimes I've had, you know, some of my referee friends, they're like, he was obviously, like, after the match, he was like, Sam, it's obviously like you know, something like, what do you mean? And I'm like, it's very difficult, especially like that. But like sometimes it's more obvious and you have to do it. But sometimes it can be quite tough. And we have different perspectives, obviously, because like I'm more medical there, just like seeing things from a refereeing perspective. I was like, you know, tell them to like put the thumb down, because that's the thumb down is like the sign to the referee to give the other opponent a point for simulation. So it's they're long days. They're challenging because you have to keep your concentration and like, you know, kind of anticipate, you know, what can happen. You can deal with like events which can be quite small, such as minor cuts and that, to like massive events such as like accidental, you know, choking, which can lead to unconsciousness. And because like, you know, it's not jiu-jitsu, but like some, you know, of these guys might like have dabbed in those like sports, and then they know what they're doing, and then like it's a bit, and then the person goes unconscious, and yeah, so which we don't want to see, to like broken bones and stuff. So there is a lot to it. There is a lot to it, and I'm lucky. I love it, because otherwise I think it'd be too tough to do. But like I love. It's a privilege to watch, like, you know, that level of sport that so close, you know. So it's good. And there's also, I mean, the other thing I should mention is the doping side of things, or the anti-doping side of things. So for the anti-doping sides, we collaborate with them to make sure there's no anti-doping violations going on, and sometimes things like that happen. So yeah, there's lots of challenges.
We'll come back to you on the anti-doping thing, because okay. I have a few questions on that.
Okay.
But when it comes to, you know, you were speaking about a minute ago, being in the thick of it and dealing with the tensions and things like that of the coaches, of the wrestlers themselves, you know, in some sports, referees and the medical staff, you know, are seen to be sort of in cahoots, if you like, and they're either heroes or villains. How do you deal with the knowing that, you know, your decision can...
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Upset some people and obviously make some other people happy.
Yeah, I mean, in especially in the international scene and in the United World, like I have there's a good, we've got, luckily, like, you know, some of my colleagues are some of the most excellent and fascinating doctors that I've ever met, so to work with, so we've got a good team to support each other first and foremost. I really like to, just because I also am, I enjoy the sport, and as well, like, I make friends and, like, you know, introduce myself to a lot of different, like, you know, athletes, coaches, countries, so that everyone, like, you know, knows me, knows who I am, like, you know, knows my, like, you know, character as well. And it's not just like when, like, say, for example, a difficult decision does need to be made. And usually, thankfully, we don't. I think the referees, bless them, who have a much tougher job than me, and I think get a lot of more stick than us as well. They have a much tougher time. But like, say, like when it comes to that time when that difficult decision is made, and like, I don't know, it's Russia in that corner and like the USA in the other corner, and you're just going with like your judgment call, objective judgment call at the time, which is obviously going to naturally upset one party. At least they will know, like, look, like, that Sam's just doing what he's, like, you know, thinks is best. Like, you know, okay, they'll be annoyed, naturally, whatever, because it's competition and then thing. But it's not like I'm trying to, you know, they don't, it's not a sense of, okay, like, oh, the ref or the doctor's screwing us over, you know, something like that. So I think establishing relationships is something that's quite important as well, from that can really benefit a lot of things, you know, benefits trust, you know, so the athletes can, like, you know, come to you for, like, you know, medical advice, you know, for, like, doping queries, anti-doping queries, of course, like, you know, like, for this medication, for, you know, coaches will, like, you know, come. So I think that's something that I, you know, consciously do, because I like, I'm social, I like making friends and connections like that, but also I think it is a good thing to, like, you know, they know, okay, that, like, I can, like, you know, that's a recognizable face, or even when, like, you know, if an athlete's in a moment of stress, it's not just like a strange face that comes, they see a familiar face, and it's much more soothing in that heat of the moment, you know. A lot of the Iranians, like, because I speak like Farsi, and all of them, that, like, I'm, like, you know, familiar with, like, you know, when they've told me, they're like, you know, I love it when you're on the mat side, because like it gives me a sense of an extra sense of security and comfort, because I know like if something happens, you're there. Like, so these things are like, you know, just I guess what I think, you know, things that you can do off the mat, which can help those moments and those tough calls on the mat, really, and those tough situations. And the same principles in domestically as well, really.
Absolutely. No, I completely get that. And I think what's really cool about that is, yeah, the emotional security you give them. Just, you know, knowing that someone's there to, if they fall, you can catch them, figuratively speaking. So moving on to doping and policy making, which I know you've done. How, you know, from a fan's perspective, right, doping in any sport is seen as just, oh, the athlete's an idiot. You know, they knew what they were doing. But in reality, what is that actually? What's the margin like?
Unfortunately, I think doping is rife still in all sports. And I think just with the nature, I can't remember exactly like the year, but actually, you know, these governing bodies such as like WADA, World Anti-Doping Association, are like, you know, now, you know, very well funded and like, you know, overseeing all these things. They're actually not that old, these organizations. They've formed not too long ago. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think we have been playing from an anti-doping has been playing catch up to doping for like a long, like, you know, time. And I think the gap is getting narrow, but this is why you see, like, you know, for example, like medalists, so like the heavyweight in the heavyweight division in freestyle wrestling for London 2012 and the 125 kilogram division, the gold and the silver medalist last year both got bans because it was found on, like, you know, new retesting due to new technology that actually what was initially found to be, like, you know, a clean sample was actually like a banned substance, and they got doping violations and they had their medal stripped of them. So the bronze medalist became the gold Olympic gold medalist. But he became Olympic champion 10 years after the moment, and he'll never be able to get that moment back. He'll never be able to replicate that moment when he's on the podium and the national anthem's playing. He'll never be able to, you know, the difference of his life trajectory being an Olympic gold medalist to Olympic bronze medalist, not just financially, but in terms of reputation, glory, and everything that like came out there. So I do view, like, you know, dopers in sport as thieves, really, because you're like, you know, you're really robbing people of what their lives should have been, you know, those that like were like, you know, doing it like legitimately. And then, like, you know, there's this like kind of like, you hear this like culture of like, oh, if everyone's doing it, then maybe I should do it. And like, because especially at the Olympic level, like, you know, as I say, the different, you know, maybe like in your country, the difference both in terms of glory and financially between being a silver medalist and a gold medalist, or even just being a medalist and a non-medalist, it's like, it's massive. So people, you know, athletes do like, you know, look and see, can we cheat the date? Some of them do, but it's really like, you know, in terms of from an anti-doping perspective, kind of being ahead of the curve, which I think overall, like right now, we're still probably not, you know, but I think we're, like, you know, getting there. And I mean, I can't even think of one time I've dealt with various anti-doping cases in sports. I can't think of one time when I've heard of athletes say, yeah, I did do it. Like, you know, it's always... You know, it's always a contaminated supplement, and sometimes it is, all right? Like, that's the problem. It's like, it becomes like one of those boy cry wolf situations. It's unfortunate, you just never believe, you never, and I can understand this, it's very hard to believe. So there's this kind of like, I don't know, like, if it's quite like, I think it's not quite innocent, guilty until proven innocent, but there probably is an element to it, because once like that happens, everyone makes up their own stories, or like, you know, they think that no one will know the details, and then everyone just automatically thinks, yeah, they must have, like, you know, done it. I remember there was like one time in a wrestling tournament in Italy a few years ago where there was a fantastic, like, Iranian wrestler, fantastic, who'd come back from a ban. He had a 4-year suspension. So he was caught. He served his like ban. I think he denies. I'm not sure the details, but I think he also denied. I don't know what. But anyway, he did get a suspension. He served his time and came back for competition. And there was like two Americans. One was a Olympic champion, probably regarded as one of the best wrestlers in the world. And the other one was under 23 world champion, kind of like also of that level. And I remember like the Americans were very excited to see these two Americans fight wrestle each other in this tournament. But what happened was the Iranian who'd come back like destroyed the younger guy like in about a minute or something like that. And then he pinned like the Olympic champion, this like big upset, like in the next match, like completely destroying it. And these guys are like the best of the best, and he's just destroying them. And I remember like some of like the Americans talking to him, oh yeah, but he served his ban and everything like that. But I was like, okay, he served, but it doesn't mean like he's done it now. So like, it's a shame that stigma still stays. It's very hard to get rid of it, you know, because at that time, like he was at least from a testing point of view, he was clean. So actually, like you know, but people will always obviously like, you know, there's that stigma, and then if you have cheated. But I hate doping. It's very dirty, as I say, like it robs people of, you know, the glory that they should have. But ultimately when it's so high stakes and these things, everyone's gonna look for trying to get somehow that 1%, and some people will do it in a nefarious way.
Absolutely. And I was gonna ask, how, you know, what are some of the common substances that people get caught out by?
So in wrestling, it used to be, not just used to be, and kind of still is. I think anabolic, like, you know, steroids is definitely, like, you know, one of the big, like, you know, culprits there in terms of, like, you know, building, like, muscle strength, things like that. I guess a lot of athletes, really, and this is something that, like, we do in terms of trying to educate the adverse health consequences of also using these substances, because, okay, there might be that, like, you know, potential benefit from a performance enhancing benefit temporarily, but like, you know, maybe when, like, you know, 5 years, 10 years time, when you're retired, you've got kidney failure, your heart's like, you know, grown double its size, and you've got like, you know, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. There's all these, like, you know, the education of, like, you know, why also, you know, like the adverse side effects of taking these. But in terms of substances, I would say steroids, diuretics, which is like, you know, gets fluid from the body. So that was something a lot of, like, you know, wrestlers would do, because it's a weight-based sport to like cut weight, you know, to use diuretics to like get fluid out of their body to make it, to meet a certain, like, you know, weight. Thankfully, like, you know, that's cut down, because we now do our weigh-ins on 2 days. So no wrestler really wants to cut weight 2 days in a row, which I think is really great. I think those are some of, like, you know, the big ones, really.
Awesome, thank you. And I think, you know, you can't really say wrestling without thinking about, you know, professional wrestling and things like that. And the representation of doctors in, let's say, the WWE or AEW, what are your thoughts there?
So I don't have much experience of working with that kind of wrestling, but it is, especially in countries where, say, Olympic wrestling and the Olympic disciplines of freestyle and Greco aren't, say, that popular. I get it all the time in the UK when I say, like, I'm chief medical officer of, say, like, I work with, like, United World Wrestling, and the doctor of this. A lot of people that are maybe not familiar say, oh, so Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, like, you know, like, you get like these kind of things. And I kind of view it as, like, you know, WWE and say AEW and stuff, they're performers in the same way that, say, like, you know, the Cirque du Soleil and, like, you know, the performers there are. So it's not that, you know, what they do requires a lot of athleticism, high physical demand. Some of the things they do are really risky, like jumping off, like, you know, table from a ladder onto, like, you know, table onto their pole somersault. So, you know, they're prone to, like, high risk maneuvers and getting high risk injuries. What they do is, like, you know, I know some people, oh, it's fake and all that, but no, like, I think it's just different. It's not a sport, you know. It's not like Olympic wrestling, which is under the Olympic umbrella. They are, you know, subject to in and out of competition, like, you know, testing for, like, anti-doping. Companies like, I'm not sure, but companies like WWE and AEW may have, like, in-house drug policies. They may not, but they're not, you know, those athletes, like, those performers, their employees might, like, you know, if it permits them, take performance-enhancing drugs to look the parts, to get more muscle, to look like, you know, like Hulk Hogan, like, you know, these, like, you know, like superstars. I knew it was a problem back in, like, you know, the 80s and 90s. I really don't know if it's improved. I hope it has, like, you know, there. But I think it's very different from that aspect. It's not. So I think that's what I say. Although, like, those guys, they perform, and they perform athletic, high impact, like, you know, activities which can, you know, physically demanding, and takes a degree of training. But it's more, I view it more like, say, as I say, like Cirque du Soleil or something like that, where, like, you know, they will require doctors, they will require medical attention. It's slightly different to a sports, though, whereas you're not, like, looking to compete with, like, an athlete on a certain date to outperform them. So you need to be healthy, but you also need your, like, performance optimization. So you need to make sure that, like, you know, the right, you know, you're periodizing your camps, sleep enough, sports psychology, and it's not a predetermined outcome such as, like, WWE and AEW. Like, it's an actual competitive sport. So there is definitely, I think both, you know, naturally both require doctors, and they need, like, you know, their health looked after, because some of the things I've seen, like, you know, in WWE, something I used to watch it when I was a kid. I mean, like, I liked it when I was a kid. You know, I remember, like, wrestlers, like, jumping off, like, you know, like, ladders onto, like, you know, tables or thumbtacks, like, crazy stuff, like, you know what I mean? And it's like, so they did. I hope they, I'm hoping the year 2024 that they have some better, good medical provisions there. But it is different. It's not a sport. It's more performance, like, you know, athletic performance.
No, I think that's a really fair opinion. And I like the way that you've compared it to Cirque du Soleil. I think, yeah, it very much is that to a T. So I wanted to ask about the nature of funding. Obviously, being in it, being around it, seeing the athletes that, you know, rise through it. In terms of here in Britain, what's the funding like and the money in the sport?
In terms of really the numbers itself, I must admit I'm not too familiar, because that's not really my remit. But I can definitely tell you that if I'm comparing it to, say, other nations, I think sport's one of those things where you don't really get the funding until you achieve success in terms of medals, like from the government, like, say, like, you know, so UK sports, you know, like, and things. The catch 22 of it is that it's hard to achieve those results without funding. So when you have, like, countries like, you know, countries like Iran, which economically is a lot worse off altogether than, like, say, the UK, but I know for a fact, like, you know, the Iranian gigantic, if you compare it to, like, you know, the British wrestling, but it's because they have, you know, the majority of their Olympic medals traditionally comes from wrestling. So they get, like, a lot more funding because of that. It's a national sport, you know, stuff like that. In Russia, again, like, they get a lot of success. So, you know, their funding is going to be a lot different. Certain other countries, like, might seek, like, you know, sponsorships, or, like, athletes to get, like, you know, kind of sponsored that way. In Britain, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think there's anyone at them. I think there's a change of a funding application, so they're hoping for more funding, which hopefully I think is invested in the right way to get the right staffing and coaching staffing and get performed in the right way. But it is a challenge. I mean, I know athletes that are my friends now that, like, are probably no longer actively competitive. They've got their Commonwealth medals, and a lot of their common gripes were, like, you know, we never got, you know, the support, financial support. And that was something that, like, you know, made them, or at least they view, made them, like, you know, maybe, like, would have helped them gain more success if they did so, and things like that. It's tough, as I say, like, you know, wrestling is one of those sports where there is actually little, even if you do everything right, you might not get to that stage, that level, you might not achieve that success, and you might not get, you might get very little reward out of it. But I know, like, you know, individuals that, like, saying this, Because of the way it is, like, in Olympics and Worlds, that if you are, you can, every country can only put in one representative per weight class. So if you're, like, let's say, like, if you're American, you're, like, say, the top 286 kilograms in the world. The top 286 kilograms in the world, everyone in, like, the wrestling world might know are these two American guys. But that second guy will never be able to go to the Olympics because he can't beat the one guy. So the second best guy in the world will never actually be in the Olympics. Hypothetically speaking, of course. It's crazy. So what happens is that actually a lot of times is that you'll see, and this happens a lot in Dagestan and Russia because of the depth of, like, you know, talent, is that you'll have guys that, like, are number two and three, and they will probably beat 90% of the rest of the world, but they can't beat the number one guy. So they'll never make world champions, they'll never make Olympics. So what they do is they'll, like, go to another country and become naturalized and, like, represent, say, Uzbekistan, say, represent Romania, Kazakhstan. So sometimes you look, like, I'm looking at these, like, the brackets for a weight class, and I'm like, okay, so, like, yeah, it is Russia, it's like Russia, Hungary, like Germany, France, Iran, this USA. But actually, like, you know, half of those European countries, they're actually ethnically, they're Russian or Dagestan, you know what I mean? But, like, yeah, so, like, it's crazy. So why I was, like, saying that is that, so some of these guys are, like, really, really good, but don't even get to that, like, say, like, if you're in a country where, like, you're in America, Russia, or Iran, your chances of actually getting to the, probably, Olympics, you have to be number one in that, like, you know, country. If you're number one in Spain, and no disrespect to, like, you know, Spain, but Spain, like, you know, has a much less depth, say, like, you know, for the UK, like, you know, let's use, like, a lot less, like, you know, to become number one in Britain is a lot easier than becoming number one in the USA.
Yeah.
So what those guys that, like, you know, do, like, end up, like, you know, going through the process, but maybe never even making it near their national teams in, like, America, Russia, they still have learned so many good lessons through wrestling, such as work ethic, discipline, embracing the grind, like, going through, like, adversity, that I know a lot of guys that end up becoming extremely successful businessmen. They become doctors, they become, like, dentists, they become really good coach. Like, they translate, they take that those skills that they learn from wrestling, those acquired skills, and then they implement them into another area of life, and then they become extremely successful in another area of life. Which is why another reason why I think wrestling is fantastic.
Absolutely, and that's that. You know, that harps back to the thing that I asked you right at the start of this. You know, what did you learn as a kid when you were out there, and what were some of those sort of transferable skills, if you like, amazing interviews week almost. Okay, and I was going to ask, in terms of from you, you know, on a personal level, what are some of the most difficult moments you've experienced as a doctor?
Moments. I think some of the, especially in, like, wrestling medicine, some of the difficult moments are probably quite close to some of my favorite moments, actually, because when I was in, let's say, I remember the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham very well. So I was the doctor for the Commonwealth Games for wrestling in Birmingham. And I was for a lot of the British, the English Scots, their doctor, like, through their, like, camp, through, like, you know, their journey to the Commonwealth Games. So a lot of my, you know, when I was also there on Matt's side, the competition doctor, like, it wasn't just, like, athletes that were stepping on, like, the mats that I was, like, looking after, they were my friends. So seeing, you know, some of them got medals, some of them didn't, you know, some of them saw heartbreak, some of them saw glory. So it was emotional, but equally I have to keep my emotions in check because I'm still, like, you know, I'm still doctor for the competition. And I need to, like, you know, look after everybody. And I can't, like, get, like, you know, too emotional about it. For example, like, my friend who's, like, just, like, you know, lost the bronze medal match, I need to, like, you know, be very, I need to switch off and go on to the next bout, you know. I'll check in with him, like, you know, and on the night of, like, you know, the after party or whatever. But, like, it's I guess, like, yeah, that emotional side of it, being tied emotionally sometimes, like, you just have to be, you know, you have to be professional about it and do the job. But it's tough.
On, you know, family life and your friendships personally, how much does wrestling take out of your life?
Wrestling's given me a lot more than it's ever taken. I think will only give me more than it's ever taken. A lot of my very good friends and people that I know are from wrestling. The experiences that I have had and some of that I've, like, you know, I know I'm going to have in the very near future are because of, like, you know, wrestling. I personally love, like, you know, traveling, culture, you know, learning different cultures, things like that. The invitations that I'm, like, getting right now, it's pretty cool. So, like, so a little side story to kind of, like, so there's a wrestler in Iran, and he's probably, I'd probably say he's the most popular wrestler worldwide in terms of, like, Instagram and just general popularity. And, like, that, his name's Hassani Yazdani, and he, like, his, like, he can't really walk on, like, the streets of Tehran without getting, like, you know, mobbed. Like, I can even show you, like, videos later of him, like, getting, like, mobbed. Like,
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, in terms of being, I just wanted, like to hug him or get a selfie or stuff like that. But so I was the doctor for the World Championships in Oslo, and he was in the final. His rival, he's got, there's a really good rivalry going on with a fantastic wrestler called David Taylor. So these two are, like, really probably two of the best wrestlers in the world. He has Danny and Taylor, and, like, he, so they've wrestled each other a few times, and on this occasion in Oslo, Yazdani, it was 6 weeks after the Tokyo Olympics, which in itself was strange because there's usually not a World Championships after an Olympic year, but because COVID postponed, so this was the way, like, it was 6 weeks out. So Taylor had beat him for the Olympic gold medal with a, in the final seconds, with a last, like, second takedown in Tokyo, and 6 weeks on they had a rematch, and Yazdani beat him for the World Championship. So, and it was like there was, like, all these, like, the fans were going crazy, like, the audience were going crazy. I was Matt Doctor for, like, you know, that moment, and you can see me kind of in the back when, like, you know, the wrestling happens and, like, Yazdani's going crazy. And in Iran, so that year that was coming into that year, it's the year, it was the year 1400, so, because they do a different time. So at the moment, like, in about a month's time, it's going to become the year 1403. So, like, so they had an awards, like, ceremony for the top sporting moment in the last century for Iran. Not just wrestling, like, sporting moment. And there was, like, you know, contenders such as, like, Iran beating USA in the World Cup 98, like, you know, World Cup, football World Cup, like, breaking, like, the world's strongest weightlifting record for the heavyweight, like, you know, breaking the record for that in London 2012. But what was voted the top sporting moment of the history was Yazdani beating getting revenge on Taylor 6 weeks after the Olympics. And just for me to, like, be able to say that I was a part of that, like, you know, moment. Like, and so some of, like, my family, like, when wrestling, I can't really explain to you how crazy they are for wrestling in Iran. They even just say that, like, they like, are so proud of it. So, like, to be able just to say that for me is quite a cool thing to say, good, cool achievement. Like, when I have kids, I'll be able to, like, you know, like, say that, like, I'll be able to show the video. It's something, you know, not everyone can say. So, like, these kind of, like, things, this is what I mean, like, wrestling will always give me more than it will take, because, like, without wrestling, like, I wouldn't be able to say that moment. It's such a cool thing. And then, like, and he gave me his, like, Yazdani gave me a singlet. So I still need to frame it, actually, and, like, put it on the wall. I'm so busy, I'm putting up. But, like, that's pretty cool, you know? So, and yeah, and, like, these experiences that I'm sure I'll have even more different ones in the future is, yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
I love that story. And I was actually going to ask you if, you know, what was some of your favorite memorabilia or your proudest moments? So thank you for, you know, exploring that. No, I've really enjoyed this discussion. I think it's been amazing. And I've got so much more respect for, you know, Olympic wrestling in general and kind of how it's set up, kind of the nuances, and also just how bloody difficult it is, that 1%. You know, I think it's wild to say only the top person. You know, you could be number two forever. And yeah, so thank you.
It's wild. It's part of the reason why those that are in the world of it love it. But I would encourage anyone to, like, you know, give it a watch, give it, like, you know, a try. Like, you know, it's a great way, whether it's just looking for fitness or, like, you know, you want to make something more of it. It's a very unique and wonderful sport.
Thank you so much for your time, Sam.
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of An Athlete's Blueprint. The authentic stories shared in this podcast aren't for everybody. They were just for you, a true sports enthusiast. Whether you're going into your next practice session or at the starting line for the finals, take the winner's insight from the athletes and the coaches you heard from today. Remember, this advice is only available on An Athlete's Blueprint podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.